People change. It'll almost be like meeting them for the first time.
And if the pineapple was placed at the entrance to a village, it meant that the strangers were welcome.
This audio project, which I started just 2 weeks ago, may be the only outlet I have to get my experience documented. I'm going to try to tell you everything in chronological order, but I need to be honest with you from the start. I'm not sure I'm ever going to understand what happened to me. For 3 days this week, I was in Barton, New Hampshire, and I have a lot to tell you. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 2, Barton. Lumber, pulp, and paper were once the blood, skin, and bones of northern New Hampshire. In the 1920s, there was a sawmill and at least 5 paper mills in the region. Now there are none. The last of the mills closed 10 years ago. Some would say the region is still recovering. As I was driving up north for my 20th high school reunion, I wondered what I was going to find there, and whether anyone at all would remember the late Alistair Glamis.
Yeah, I don't remember Alistair, but I remember his father, Sam Glamis. He just died a year or so ago. I think it was cancer. My family had a nickname for him. We called him Walker Talker.
This is Sarah Fillingate. I decided to spend the whole weekend in Barton, including Friday night, even though the reunion wasn't until Saturday. There is only one option in town for a place to stay, a bed and breakfast run by the Fillingate family, the Crescent House, named after Crescent Pond, a nearby swimming hole.
Why Walker Talker?
Every day he would walk from his property all the way to the country store and back, which must be at least a couple of miles. He was always deep in conversation when he walked.
On a cell phone?
Oh no, not Sam Glamis. I don't think that he had any kind of phone. He was a lone pioneer. He was definitely talking to himself.
And you really don't remember Alistair?
I first heard of the kid when he disappeared. It's been a while.
It was a long time ago?
A lot of folks in Barton thought Sam Glamis might have killed the kid. Nothing ever came of it. I figured that might have been who Sam Glamis was talking to all those years. His son, I mean.
Sarah set me up in a small bedroom that was usually used for hired help. When I initially called, she said she was booked because of the reunion. When I said that that was why I was calling, she made room. The regular rooms she rented were all filled with former classmates of mine. I will get to them in a moment. I want to add something that Sarah said. I didn't know it at the time, but it would come up later in my visit to Barton.
Sure you haven't been to town for a while?
Oh, I'm very sure. My parents moved when I was in college. Honestly, I haven't been back since. Have things changed much?
Oh no, nothing ever changes around here. It's just that your face is so familiar. Maybe not. Did you used to go to the library when you were young?
I didn't. I'm not sure I ever had a library card.
Well, that's sad to hear. You missed out. I volunteer at the library. I've done it for many years.
At the Crescent House, Sarah cooks you breakfast in the morning if you request it. There is a small dining room, and on Saturday morning, I found 4 of my classmates, all with their spouses. I was the odd loner. We all remembered each other, of course. 2 of them agreed to be interviewed for the podcast. The other 2 respectfully declined. I think it was the idea of being recorded for anything at all that made them nervous. Anyway, after breakfast, I sat each of the willing in the sitting room, a space defined by the Fillingate's family photos, of which some go back to the late 1800s. It felt like the history of Barton was observing our conversations. Here's my former classmate, Jason Sentry.
All right. I have to admit, I haven't thought about him in a long time. I didn't know he was declared dead until you told me just now. I do remember his disappearance, though. I was in college in Connecticut, summer of my freshman year, after my freshman year, and I had stayed in Hartford that summer. I think my parents told me. I only remember because it got me thinking about how quickly things change. You know, like, how many of us would get through college, get a job, how many of us would end up in prison. I had those thoughts after high school, and I think his disappearance made me think, whoa, it's happening. Things are changing, you know?
Do you remember anything about Alistair from high school?
Not much. I mean, he's pretty quiet, right? I mean, I remember that much, I guess. I only think he was around the last few months of school. I had English class with him, I guess. I don't know. Thinking back, it was all weird.
What was weird?
I mean, who moves to a new school the last few months of the school year?
I guess his family had a reason.
Yeah, but moved to Barton? Don't you think they must have been, like, running from something?
The second classmate I spoke to had a slightly different memory of Alistair. This is Carol Minkowski, now Smith.
Alistair. You want me to tell you a little bit about Alistair? Alistair was blonde, kind of like startlingly blonde, almost like albino, bright blonde hair. He was pretty interesting. Sure, he was quiet, but he had hearts aflutter, if you know what I mean.
I don't remember that at all.
I remember every girl I knew was interested in him in those last few months of school. He had this charisma about him. I remember an underclassman scooped him right up. I don't know. Maybe it was just the hair. Can't remember a whole lot, but he was interesting. We can say that. He was very interesting.
Do you remember his disappearance?
No. Yeah. No, I had no idea he disappeared until this morning. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why are you really doing this?
Like I said, I got a strange note. It was like a hidden message, but with blood on it.
I get it. The pineapple, the word Reynolds. But do you really think there's anything to it? He's been gone a long time. I just wonder if the whole thing should be left alone. You're bound to come across a family member that I can't imagine will be happy with you for what you're doing. I mean, it's been over 20 years. Can't you just let him rest in peace? Look, I'm sorry. I'm sure this wasn't what you were expecting when you asked to record me. I just really needed to speak my mind.
Carol was probably right. I know she didn't mean to do it, but she made me second guess my coming to the reunion at all. While my first few interviews were good enough, I wasn't uncovering anything. If anything, I was establishing to people who are meeting me again for the first time, as my sister Talia would say, that I'm a bit strange. As you've already heard, I interviewed Sarah Fillingate that morning as well. My only other plan for the day was to go out to the land where Alistair and his father lived. I called Alfred P. Daniels to ask where the land was. He's the retired lawyer who sent me the box in the first place. Unexpectedly, he said that he would meet me there. He gave me an address, and around noon we met each other at the end of a long dirt road. I had not met him face to face until this point. Alfred P. Daniels looked and sounded more like a lumberjack than a retired lawyer. I switched over from my car to his pickup truck, and he took me into the woods.
As you can see, this area is completely undeveloped. We have some old growth in parts of Barton, and I suspect there may be a bit more on the Glamis plot.
I noticed as he was talking about the land that he was sneaking sideways glances at me. Finally, he addressed it.
I thought you told me you hadn't been around here for a while. You've made me out to be a fool.
What? I don't know what you mean.
I'm just saying that I've seen you around. You lied to me.
I have not been in Barton in over 10 years.
At this point, Mr. Daniels stopped the truck. It was awkward, to say the least. He turned and glared at me. He rubbed his chin, put the car back into gear, and kept driving.
This is a small town. We don't get a lot of new faces. If I have you mistaken, then I apologize.
The road led to a small dirt parking area. There were some no hunting signs, and a private property sign too. Mr. Daniels told me not to worry. The organization that now owned the land just wanted to keep teenagers from getting into trouble. The current plan was to maintain the land for conservation.
The cabin was just over there. Like I told you before, I helped clear out the personal belongings. The Barton Fire Department burned the cabin down as part of a training exercise. There isn't much there but the memory of it.
He led me to a clearing that was notable for the charred ground. According to Mr. Daniels, it had been almost a year since the burn, but I could still smell it. Grass was growing in patches where the house had been, but there was an obvious square burnt into the land.
You just stood there. Well, Sherlock, sounds like you're doing a good job cracking the case.
That's my sister, Talia. After getting back to the Crescent House, I called her to tell her how much of a bad idea this whole trip was.
Well, Mr. Daniels smoked a cigarette while I walked around a little bit and got back into his truck. He said like two words to me on the ride back. He was convinced that he saw me around town. Sarah Fillingate said the same thing.
Have you been up there? Are you lying to me too?
Not funny. I'm thinking maybe I should just go home.
Now that will make for interesting listening. Things got awkward, so I went home. You told me this was going to be a mystery podcast. Embrace the mystery, Sherlock. This is good stuff.
Okay, alright.
When's the actual reunion anyway?
It's tonight at the tavern. Classy, right?
Hey, buddy. I was a hostess there my senior year. I love that place. Tell Mickey I miss him. On second thought, I think he died. You have no time for ghosts.
I spent 2 hours sitting in my small room at the Crescent House feeling awkward. The reunion wasn't until the evening, and already I was hiding. The only thing that ultimately inspired me to step out of the room was my stomach. I was starving for lunch. When I was young, there were packaged sandwiches at the Barton Country Store. I decided to sneak out of hiding and get a sandwich. I wasn't prepared to record anything, so I'm going to have to just tell you this story. When I stepped into the Barton Country Store, I was flooded with a lot of memories. I had been there many times as a kid. I took a tuna fish sandwich from the refrigerator case and brought it up to the counter. A woman who I did not recognize smiled, and she said, "It looks like we're following each other around today."
Lover, your love is like pure danger. Your heart is the dark stranger, asking for a
The look on my face must have clued her into the fact that I had no idea what she was talking about. She said she'd seen me at the post office. When I told her that I didn't go to the post office, her wrinkled brow reminded me of the same look Mr. Daniels gave me in his pickup truck. She looked confused and offended. She thought I was lying to her. The entirety of my next episode will recount what happened at my 20th high school reunion and the terrifying event that followed. I don't know how else to describe it. In the meantime, if you know anything about the disappearance of Alistair Glamis and wish to share, then please visit my website, disappearancepodcast.com. Thanks to my sister Talia, Sarah Fillingate, Alfred P. Daniels, Jason Sentry, and Carol Smith for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Ross Boyd, Prom Queen, and Rudy Sims, and Tori Miller of Four Hands for providing the music. This show is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Please take a moment to rate and review this program on iTunes so word can spread. Thanks also to Laura Scafati, Chris Klemmer of the podcast New Hampshire Cast, and Angel Smith for the support. I'll continue this story in 2 weeks. Partners in Crime Media.